speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Thursday, July 18th, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Today on the show, we're going to have Hal Schertliff, who was with Camp Constitution. I interviewed him a couple of weeks ago before the annual event that they have in Boston. And again, Camp Constitution came up in the news as they began a lawsuit against Boston for shutting down their display of the Christian flag, because they talked not only about the Constitution, but about the Christian heritage behind that. They said, no, you can't fly that. Now, if you call it something else other than a Christian flag, we'll let you fly it, but not a Christian flag. Because, you know, we have this thing called the First Amendment, said the city. So now they're suing them. We're going to get a follow-up interview with him. Paul Joseph Watson will also be on with us in the second hour. And we've got some major breaking news, I think. We have Rand Paul, according to Politico, as he played golf with President Trump over the weekend on Sunday, I think it was, Saturday or Sunday. It was a foursome. It was President Trump, Rand Paul, Lindsey Graham. As I said before, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to hear the conversations going back and forth. And Rand Paul had tweeted out about that, Lindsey Graham had said, oh, I'm glad to play a round of golf with President Trump. And Rand Paul said something like, we're going to, the president and I agree on this, and we're going to push back against what Lindsey Graham is trying to do. Now, update to today, and we have Politico saying that Rand Paul was pushing the idea that he would be an emissary of peace to the Iranians, try to ease tensions there. Is there a way to back this down? The corner that John Bolton and Mike Pompeo and the radical factions of the military-industrial complex are trying to paint us into to get us into another endless regime change war in Iran, which is not in our best interest. And so we're going to talk about that, the back and forth. And we're going to talk about the history, going back to things like the terror attack in Beirut, Lebanon, that killed over 240 U.S. Marines under President Reagan. Remember when we had Mark Levin stridently lecturing President Trump about how he's going to get in there and get these people? They went Reagan to. Well, Reagan went home. Reagan said, these people are crazy. We're getting out of here. But behind the scenes, there was a major fight between the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense. And we're going to talk about that and how that parallels the fight between Lindsey Graham and Rand Paul. So as it was announced that Rand Paul will be talking to the Iranian foreign minister, who is now visiting the UN and essentially confined to the UN grounds, or maybe a couple of blocks either side of it, there is talk, as people are looking at this, the markets reacted very positively to that, and oil prices declined significantly. Because, as we have pointed out many times in my conversations with Gerald Celente, if you attack Iran, this is a suicide bombing on the U.S. economy. And most of the world's oil passes through that area. And if you want to set those oil fields on fire, you don't have the best interest of the American public, of the American economy in mind. Let's just forget for a second all of the legal and moral and military issues about that. Just take a look at the economy. President Trump would lose the election because he would lose the economy. And perhaps that's the end that Rand Paul had with him. So we're going to talk about that. We also have an update. Didn't get to this yesterday. Planned Parenthood CEO has been aborted. Yes, she was terminated with prejudice in a secret meeting. And we're going to talk about what that means. And we also have a very sick clip that I've had here on my desk for a couple of days I wanted to show you of some Planned Parenthood abortionist demonstrating how easy it is to do an abortion. They pretend that a watermelon that they have is a womb, and they extract what they call the pregnancy tissue. Mm-hmm. We're going to show you that as well. Talk about that. Yeah, don't worry. It's not, they don't show the red stuff even in the watermelon. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Thursday, July 18th, year of our Lord 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Today, we have some very positive news, both for the economy and for peace. As Politico has pointed out, Rand Paul is angling to become Trump's emissary to Iran. And as they wrote this article, we'll talk about the background with this, what happened over the weekend, the golf game that may have prevented a war. We'll see. We'll see what happens with it. But as Politico pointed this out and said, well, it looks like President Trump has signed off on the idea, the reaction from the markets is very, very positive. As Zero Hedge points out, oil prices have plunged after Trump sends Rand Paul to ease tensions with Iran. So the hopes for peace as well as the hopes for the economy, because it will absolutely destroy the economy, and it will destroy along with it President Trump's chances for a reelection. It's the economy, stupid. It still holds. That's what they said back when Bill Clinton ran for reelection. It's the economy. If the economy is doing well, the incumbent president is going to win reelection. If it's not, all bets are off. And there is no doubt about it, as Gerald Celente has pointed out many times on this program, if you go to war and take about a third of the world's oil supply immediately off of the table, and shut it down for a very long time, that is going to have massive ripples through the economy. Not ripples, tidal waves. Anybody who's old enough to remember the OPEC oil embargoes, where they asserted their political power and their economic power, knows what that will do to the economy. It totally destroyed Jimmy Carter's presidency. It was not only the Iranian embassy situation, where he came across as very, very weak in that, but it was also the stagflation, the stagnant economy and the massive inflation and the gas lines and everything else that came along with it. And you want to recreate that situation to kowtow to John Bolton and Mike Pompeo and the military-industrial complex? Perhaps that's what Rand Paul said to him. We don't really know. As Politico says, the senator pitched the idea during a recent round of golf with the president. Rand Paul asked President Trump's blessing for a sensitive diplomatic mission. Paul proposed sitting down with the Iranian foreign minister Zarif to extend a fresh olive branch on the president's behalf, the aim to reduce tensions between the two countries. And Trump signed off on the idea. Boom, there goes the oil prices. People jumped on that. With Zarif in New York City this week for UN meetings and private sit-downs with journalists and think tank experts, the prospect of the dovish Kentucky senator serving as the administration's chief diplomatic emissary has rankled many administration officials who are expressing concern that Paul's intervention threatens to scuttle the president's maximum pressure campaign against Tehran. Let's hope it does. That is a very ill-considered, suicidal maximum pressure campaign. Trump has been attempting to start negotiations with Iran for months, a campaign that has included letters to Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and an attempt to use Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe as an emissary to Tehran. And, of course, if you remember, as they were meeting to talk about peace, we're supposed to believe that the Iranians fired missiles at a Japanese tanker. So even though there was no physical evidence of that either. Anyway, moving on with the story here, it's what the recent developments with this. Paul, along with Senator Lindsey Graham and David Perdue, senator from Georgia, played a round of golf with the president on Saturday. When Trump last month called off retaliatory military strikes against Iran, Paul went on the president's favorite television network, Fox, to offer unqualified praise. At the time, Rand Paul said, quote, it really takes a statesman to show restraint amidst a chorus of voices for war. And he's absolutely right. Rand Paul also criticized the administration's policy, arguing that Iranians view the punishing sanctions imposed by the Trump administration as, quote, an act of war. And they are. Sanctions are always an act of war. Remember, Madeleine Albright, as she smugly responded when asked if the death of a half a million children due to sanctions, a half a million children in Iran. Was it worth it? Yeah, it was worth it. Yeah. Doesn't even have the decency to lie about that and say, well, it wasn't that many kids. No, she said, it's worth it. Yeah, worth it. Really? What have we achieved in Iraq? Paul has long been at odds with the team of hawks serving at the top echelon of the Trump administration, including National Security Advisor John Bolton and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. And that's the Politico report. As the oil prices go down, zero hedge again. For now, it seems the market is viewing this positively as oil prices are replunging on the apparent de-escalation. And you can see from that chart, if you pull that chart up there, massive drops as this news is coming out. Let's go back to 1984. Let's go back because, you know, we had Mark Levin screaming, gotta do what Reagan did. Well, let's talk about what Reagan did in 1984. There's a great article from The American Conservative by Mark Perry. And he goes back and revisits 1984, the year of momentary sanity in American foreign policy. The year, this is the title of the article, the year America didn't go to war. And Mark Perry writes, as tensions between the U.S. and Iran spiked this last June, Maureen Dowd, the imitable New York Times columnist, wrote that the man standing between the U.S. and another war in the Middle East wasn't a part of the Trump administration's foreign policy team, but Fox TV host Tucker Carlson. She ended her column by saying, Carlson is pointing out something that Trump needs to hear. The very people, in some cases, literally the same people who lured us into the Iraq quagmire 16 years ago, are demanding a new war, this one with Iran. But as Mark Perry points out, this was not the first time that America actually chose not to go to war. But we don't usually hear this, especially from the people of the ilk of Mark Levin. In October 1983, a truck filled with explosives leveled the four-story U.S. Marine barracks in Lebanon, killing 241 American military personnel. The intelligence community, of course, laid the responsibility at the feet of Tehran's mullahs, who had tasked Hezbollah, they said, their proxy, they said that was the Iranian proxy, with punishing the U.S. The U.S. had deployed the Marines as part of a multinational peacekeeping mission. And they wanted to push the U.S. out of the region. The incident, which was, by the way, this is, I did not know this, the largest non-nuclear explosion since World War II, touched off a legendary internal Reagan administration dispute over how and whether the U.S. should retaliate. And this mirrors, in many ways, what you're seeing playing out between these hawks now who are pushing Trump to go to war. And people like Rand Paul and Tucker Carlson, who have cooler heads and an historical perspective. So in this particular debate back in 1984, you had on one side, the hawk, was Secretary of State George Shultz. The dove was actually the Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, who had actually seen the elephant. In other words, he had been to war. As Mark Perry points out in this story, Caspar Weinberger's experience in World War II, fighting the Japanese, was absolutely horrific. Fighting inch by inch in the jungles against the Japanese, leech-infested, the Japanese resorted to cannibalism. They stacked dead bodies as barriers and so forth. You go through something like that, you take war seriously. We got a lot of chicken hawks like Mark Levin and John Bolton, who have never had that experience. And we better not listen to them. Not only have they not had any experience, they have absolutely no morality, no moral guidance, and we'll talk about that as well. It is another example of whether or not we're going to go the path of the Roman Empire, in my opinion. We'll talk about what happened in 1984, how that mirrors what's going on right now in the Trump administration. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
My eyes have seen the years and the slow parade.
Yeah, we have seen this whole thing play out for years. And there's a lot of people who have been left with tears, both in America and abroad, at the losses of our endless and useless and unconstitutional, illegal, immoral wars. And finally, Rand Paul has stepped up. Rand Paul, Tucker Carlson, talking sense to President Trump, pulling him back to his initial instincts, even though he's appointed a lot of people around him that are military industrial complex warmongers. And so let's go back to 1984, again, the year that we did not go to war. Even under Reagan, Mark Levin, Secretary of State George Shultz on the warmonger side, Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger on the other side. Cap Weinberger had opposed the deployment of Marines to begin with, and the military supported him. See, they've gone to war. They didn't want to do that. It was the civilian bureaucrats, like it is now, like John Bolton and others, who wanted to push for this war. Secretary of State argued, on the civilian side, again, this is George Shultz. He wants to go to war. He argues that American credibility was being tested, and therefore, we had to go to war to avenge the lives of 241 U.S. Marines. Cap Weinberger said, retaliate against who? You got a target? You know exactly what's going on? Again, when you compare this to the situation, oh, look, we had some tankers that were attacked. We had a Japanese tanker that was attacked while Shinzo Abe, the Prime Minister of Japan, was there, we're told, at the behest of President Trump to try to de-escalate things. And so, of course, they would respond by attacking a tanker. And then we had the liars like Mike Pompeo show us some film footage that looked like it was pulled out of the Gulf of Tonkin incident back in the 1960s. You couldn't see anything. But the people who were on the tanker, the Japanese, said there were things flying in. It wasn't landmines. And it was above the water level and so forth. Nothing that Pompeo, you know, we lie, we cheat, we steal, we have classes on how to do that, he said. The so-called Christian, Mike Pompeo, said that. These people on the left, you know, they come after Christians because of their support for innocent life, their support for traditional marriage, but they never come after the Christians who push for war, do they? That's, to me, the greatest hypocrisy. Anyway, going back to this, retaliate against who, said Caspar Weinberger. Less than a month later, and I'm reading again from Mark Perry's recollection of this in the American Conservative, he said less than a month later, the defense secretary was openly mocking Secretary of State Shultz. During one White House meeting, Weinberger implied that if Shultz had not done so, the Marines would still be alive. In other words, you pushed us into that. It's your fault because you put us in that position. Right? Which is what's happening now. If you have a situation where the American ships are attacked, I mean, we have pushed into that area when we didn't need to. We escalated a conflict. Anyway, Shultz turned on him and said, well, let me never ask for Marines again. If I do so, shoot me. And Weinberger said, well, it's easy to kill people, and it might make some people feel good, but military force must have a purpose to achieve some end. Oh, that's good stuff there. That's why we have the Constitution that we have. We have a debate as to whether or not we should get involved in a war. We don't have some bureaucrat who's never seen war, or a president who has never seen war, push us into a war. And he has said, we have never had the fidelity on who perpetrated that horrendous act. In other words, we never had any intelligence about that. And let's go back to just a couple of days ago. This was on the Drudge Report at the time and military.com, talking about a survey that was done with veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. The Pew survey asked them, was it worth it? A majority of veterans taking part in a new research study says that the cost and burden of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan outweigh any successes or progress made in either conflict. 64%, two-thirds, of veterans polled said the Iraq war was not worth fighting. 58% of Afghanistan veterans said the same thing. And they pretty much mirrored what the American public said, who had not gone to war. So, you've got those who did not serve in the wars, said 60% of them said that the Iraq war was not worth it. So 60% who didn't go to the war, 64% who went to the war said it wasn't worth it. Of those asked about Afghanistan, 59% of the public who did not go to the war said it wasn't worth it. 58% of vets. And when you look even at Republicans, and it was far more skewed towards Republicans supporting this than it was Democrats. Republican veterans supported it at a rate of three times what Democrat veterans did. But it was still less than 50% of Republican veterans. 45% versus 15% of Democrat veterans said the Iraq war was worth fighting. So only 45% of even Republican veterans said it was worth fighting. 46% of Republican veterans and 26% of Democrat veterans said the same thing about Afghanistan. That's from the latest Pew report that came out this week. And as New American points out, we are now in the longest period of sustained military conflict in history. No end in sight. Estimates of the financial cost are now $6 trillion at least. When you look at what was spent on health care and disability payments, 8,500 American military personnel have lost their lives in these conflicts. For what? What have we accomplished? Two-thirds say nothing. Nothing. And we're still there. Because the mission was not accomplished. Sorry, W. I'm even sorrier for America and Americans who lost their lives. Thousands more are enduring long-term physical, psychological, emotional suffering. Hundreds of thousands of foreigners have been killed. Christians are close to extinction in Iraq, said the archbishop in Iraq. And, of course, Christians have had a presence there since New Testament times. And, of course, they've completely been wiped out of Afghanistan. There are no more Christians in Afghanistan. And it has led to the rise of ISIS, just as our actions in Libya have. President Trump has largely failed to live up to his campaign promises to get America out of these quagmires. He's talked about it. He's tweeted about it. He hasn't done it. Hasn't done it. It's not the same thing, President Trump. You can talk all the time about the border. You can pick fights with people on Twitter. It's about time you do something about protecting our border and stopping projecting American power for the military-industrial complex. He appoints people who created these messes, and they're trying to push them into another mess. I want to play for you Mike Gravel. Let's run this, and we got just a little bit of time. Mike Gravel, back in the 2008 election cycle, I think it was, or maybe it was 2012, somebody asked him about the Vietnam War. We don't have time. We've only got about 30 seconds, and it's about a one-minute clip. He's going to lay out for people, and this is one of the reasons why. You know, they're going to be having a lottery tonight to decide who's going to be on night number one and night number two. Mike Gravel is not there. He made the qualifications, the objective qualifications for the number of people to get him into the debate. But, of course, he didn't make their poll cutoff, according to them. And we all know how polls can be rigged. We'll be right back. You would ask some very, very uncomfortable questions of these people.
Broadcasting with the power of the First Amendment. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Tonight they're going to have a televised draw, because last time they did it and didn't show people what they were doing, and a lot of people kind of wondered, how did they get all the front runners fighting each other on Thursday night, except for Elizabeth Warren, and they basically gave her a pass. They put her with the JV crowd on Wednesday night, the first night of that debate. And so they're going to do it and show everybody how they pick it at random. The lottery for these privileged characters who have won the lottery and are now going to represent the Democrat Party one way or the other. But one of the individuals that doesn't seem to make the cut, even though he objectively got, you know, they had to have at least $1 in contributions from 65,000 different people. He met that objective criteria. But they're now saying, even though he was well ahead in the polls in the last, when they had the last debate, Mike Gravel, and of course, he's almost like 90 or is 90 or something. It's incredibly old. He had some very, very pointed, very, very pointed criticism of some of these Democrats. I would have loved to have seen him in the debate. and they would love to not have him in the debate, which I think is what's behind these quote-unquote polls, so that he's not there. And so I want to go back to I guess it was about 2000, was it the 2012 cycle that he ran? Anyway, this is 2008. So it was quite a while ago that he ran for president. And he was in the debates at that point in time. Of course, they didn't call on him very much. But he had somebody ask him a pointed question, and CNN wanted to give him this question because they thought it would take him down. And I want to show you why he's not going to be invited into the debate, but it is also pertinent to what we were just talking about. The fact that two-thirds of the veterans who fought in Iraq said it's not worth it, and and almost 60% of those who fought in Afghanistan says the war was not worth it. Here's Mike Gravel when he was asked a question about Vietnam.
My name is John. I'm from West Virginia. My question is for Mike Gravel. In one of the previous debates, you said something along the lines of the entire deaths of Vietnam died in vain. How do you expect to win in a country where probably a pretty large chunk of the people voting disagree with that statement and might very well be offended by it? I'd like to know if you plan to defend that statement or if you're just going to flip-flop. Thanks.
John, why would you think I would flip-flop? I've never flip-flopped before, and I like to question. I don't get very many of them, but I'll just tell you. Thank you. Has it been fair thus far? I'll tell you, John, it's a set-up question. Our soldiers died in Vietnam in vain. You can now, John, go to Hanoi and get a Baskin-Robbins ice cream cone. That's what you can do. And now we have most favored nation trade. What did all these people die for? What are they dying for right now in Iraq every single day? Let me tell you, there's only one thing worse than a soldier dying in vain. It's more soldiers dying in vain.
That's why they're not going to let him get anywhere near the debate stage. He would take these guys down way worse than Kamala Harris took down Biden. Way worse. Because he's right. Because he's right about that issue. And, you know, Mike Gravel was the guy who had the courage to read the Pentagon Papers into the congressional record, facing expulsion and jail. Expulsion from the Senate as well as jail. And when we look at what's going on in Vietnam, that was back in 2008. Here we are, 11 years later. We see articles about how Vietnam has become one of the wealthiest countries in Asia. They got yachts all over the place. But we were told that there was something called a domino theory. Remember that? Remember that lie that killed so many people? Remember the fog of war? Where you had the documentarian... Errol Morris, I think is his name, got Robert McNamara monologuing for a very long period of time, talking about how we got into the Vietnam War, admitted that the Gulf of Tonkin incident was a false flag. That didn't really happen. We misconstrued it. Oh, we kind of made a mistake, or maybe we wanted that to happen, or whatever. And then admitted later on in that documentary that he went back years later to Vietnam, and he met with some of the people that they'd been at war with. And the guy in Vietnam stood up and banged on the table and said, "What were you thinking? Why did you go to war with us? Domino theory? Don't you realize that for 1,000 years we were at war with the Chinese? We were not their surrogates. We just wanted our independence." Our independence. And McNamara admitted that. This is what happens. We have the military-industrial complex pushing us. But it's not just the division in the White House. It's also the division on the Hill. And I want to talk to you about what's going on Capitol Hill, about the lobbyists. Take a look at what's going on in Libya, another one of our foreign policy, quote-unquote, successes, right? "We came, we saw, he died," said Hillary Clinton. Remember? Yeah, why did she go there? Well, WikiLeaks exposed some of their correspondents. They were very concerned about the fact that he was going to set up a hard metal-backed currency to compete with Western fiat currencies. He had to go. He hadn't come after anybody for decades. Reagan had sent some missiles in after he had engaged in some terrorist acts. And he stopped. Reagan was wise enough not to go in there and create massive chaos and anarchy in that country, but not Hillary Clinton in this, because the bankers had to have their way, right? And so when you look at what's going on now, Washington, Open Secrets looks at the different lobbyists and the money that is flowing back and forth. OpenSecrets.org says, warring Libyan factions are building armies. Where? In Washington, D.C. What do the armies consist of? Foreign agents, lobbyists. We've got a lobbying war going on in Libya, in Washington, over what's happening in Libya. And, of course, there's the U.N. government, which is backed by, I guess, the Washington establishment for the most part. But this is now 8 years of war going on in Libya. And we just had the warlord, Haftar, laying siege to the capital there, Tripoli, which is also the seat of the U.N.-backed government. And as Open Secrets points out, 5,000 miles away in Washington, the battle rages on a different front. Both the Libyan government, listen to this, both the Libyan government and the rebels have got multi-million dollar deals with prominent D.C. lobbyists. One of the sides, Mercury Public Affairs and Prime Policy Group, have at least 17 foreign agents to influence operations on behalf of the Libyan government. And they have agreed to pay just one of these lobbying firms $2 million annually to retain their services, to lobby for weapons, to lobby for, you know, the U.S. government, the military-industrial complex to be on their side. Then on the other side, the warlord, Haftar, and his Libyan National Army has contracted five foreign agents and operatives at Linden Government Solutions. This is a Texas firm that's headed by a former Bush administration official, Stephen Payne. Now, Payne has very close ties to Gaddafi's sons. Imagine that. And they've got a one-year deal worth $2 million. So you got the Libyan government handing $2 million to lobbyists on one side, and you got the rebels handing $2 million to lobbyists on the other side. Do you understand what these wars are about? It doesn't have anything to do with morality or anything like that, right? You look at our foreign policy, and it is just war. It's not Augustine's justified war. That's what he called it, the just war theory. No, it's nothing but war. It's just war. Augustine had a theory that controlled the thought of Christian nations for a very long time. What justifies going to war? And how are we justified in the way that we fight it? You know, before you go to war, you got to have some criteria backing that up. And we're going to talk about that when we come back and see if our foreign policy matches any of that. And then we'll see what may be happening moving forward with Rand Paul talking to the Iranian foreign minister. Hopefully, peace. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I got a couple more things to say about moving forward with this war here. But before we do, I want to remind you that we still have our 1776 worldwide specials from our 34-hour broadcast last week, still in effect at InfoWarsStore.com. You have been our sponsors. You've stood by us. We really do appreciate that so that we can be independent. We don't have to curry favor with any officials, Democrat or Republican. We can tell it like it is here. And we don't have to curry favor with big pharmaceutical companies or anybody else for that matter, except for you. If you agree with our analysis of the news, if you want an independent analysis of the news, then we really do need and appreciate your support. And we want to try to make that as easy for you as possible. So we have in this 1776 special, we have reduced a lot of our products to $17.76. That is at least 10% off everything in the store. Up to 75% store-wide, and that is all shirts and hats that are now $17.76. We have Winter Sun Plus. That's our vitamin D formula. We also have our All Natural Knockout, Sleep Support, Silver Bullet, Survival Shield X2, and X3 Nascent Iodines. We have Ultra 12, our vitamin B12 formula, Brain Force Plus, all of those, $17.76. Take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can find me on Twitter, Libertarian, and you can also find the archives of this show, not only at InfoWarsStore, not only at InfoWars.com/David-Knight-Show, but you can also find them on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe and share from YouTube as well. We have the archives of each show each day, and we also have cuts by topic that you'll find there at our YouTube channel. And a lot of people haven't found it yet. We had over 60,000 people before we were abruptly terminated, and about a year ago. And we only got about 2,500 of those back now. We set this thing up about 2 months ago, I think. So don't forget to go to Libertarian. Libertarian. Not Libertarian, but Libertarian. YouTube and Twitter. Okay, let's take a look at our war policy, our foreign policy. As I said, it is now just war. Endless war. For no reason at all. War for money, as I just pointed out. Libya. A warlord has hired two lobbyists to lobby Capitol Hill, $2 million. And you've got the Libyan government, $2 million for lobbying firms to lobby on the other side. And that's one of the reasons why, when we go into one of these conflicts, we usually wind up arming both sides. It's all for the military-industrial complex. It's all about the money. It has absolutely nothing to do with greater principles. We don't have any objectives, and that brings us to why we are supposed to have a debate about war and why Congress is supposed to make that decision as representatives of the people. It goes back to the Christian foundations of our society. It goes back to Augustine. He formulated, and this has informed the way Christian nations operated for millennia, he had four basic rules. And let's go down these and see how they match in these particular conflicts. Well, let's focus on Iran for right now. So you have to have just authority. And it's a justified authority. Let's just put it that way. Is this a legitimate political and legal process that we have followed? And that doesn't mean that you take this authorization for the use of military force that was passed in the aftermath of 9/11, and you use that as a blank check to go to war endlessly with everybody on earth. No. 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 Are you going to have a discussion, a debate? And are you going to have a vote up or down by the Congress? So, no, we fail on that one, don't we? Number two, a justified cause. Has a wrong been committed to which the war is the appropriate response? No, we haven't been attacked by Iran. As a matter of fact, if you want to say they attacked us because we went there with a massive military buildup and they shot down a drone, remember that even they say it was over their territory. Pompeo says that it was 20 miles off their coast. Well, just remember, we reserve a 200-mile border that we say is American territory off of our coasts. And 20 miles is closer to their land, even if Pompeo is saying the right thing, 20 miles is closer than Catalina Island is to the coast of California. That's 26 miles across the sea. Santa Catalina is the place to be, if you remember that song. Number three, right intention. Is the war action limited to righting the wrong? And no further than that. And that's why we're talking about things like mission creep, right? Are we going to be there forever? Take a look at the fact that you have Barack Obama, the first American president to be at war, the first American president to be at war the entire 8 years of being in office. And prior to that, George W. Bush nearly made it. He just got a late start with 9/11. But, yeah, no open-ended wars, no occupation. See, we don't debate why we're there. Why are we going there? Well, of course, you know, in Iran, we want regime change, right? That's not a justified cause. And we don't have an end goal here, right? We don't have the right intention here. What is the purpose here? Do we have a specific goal, something that we specifically want to accomplish? Well, yeah, you know, the regime change. And that means we're going to have to stay there and occupy the country. And that hasn't worked anywhere we've tried that. Never worked. Never worked. These asymmetric warfare issues, never, never worked. Not a single one. Last one. Number four, said Augustine, when he's talking about justified war, he said it should be done as a last resort. Has every other means of righting the wrong, of course we didn't have a wrong to start with, right? They didn't wrong us. Has every other means of righting the wrong been attempted sincerely so that no other option but war remains? Now, here's where we may get into a tricky bit here. What the military-industrial complex will say if Rand Paul is not able to de-escalate the tension, if he meets with this Iranian foreign minister, what they'll say is, well, that's it. You know, forget those first three things. We don't need to have any authority. We don't need to have a cause. We don't need to have a right intention. But we've tried everything that we could to get these guys to kowtow to us. And since they won't do that, we've exhausted all of our options. Now we've got to have war. That's exactly what they're going to do. It's not justified. One out of four doesn't justify it. And that fourth one is not justified either. You don't even get to number four. But as Reason points out, if Trump doesn't want a war with Iran, he should stop pushing Iran toward war. Demanding capitulation from Tehran is a recipe for disaster. They write to a wide cross-section of the Washington foreign policy establishment, Iran is the source of all mischief in the Middle East. Think about what they say all the time. And they list this out here in Reason magazine. Oh, Iran sponsors terrorism. Wait a minute. I remember that we do that too, right? Wasn't it John McCain who was raising money for the Mujahideen, called him, you know, Adopt a Muj? And then the Mujahideen morphed into Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda morphed into ISIS. McCain actually had his picture taken with these so-called, you know, good guys, good guy terrorists. You know, we do the same thing. We have proxies that we leverage to overthrow other governments, don't we? Don't we do that too? So we're told Iran sponsors terrorism. Iran leverages proxies around the region to keep its opponents on the defensive. It seems like we do that. They threaten to use crude oil as a weapon. Aren't we doing that? Aren't we doing that as well? And they continue to develop the region's largest ballistic missile arsenal. We have the largest arsenal anywhere in the world. We have spend more and have a bigger military than the rest of the world combined. Our increase in the military budget the last 2 years has been more than the entire military budget of the Russian army. Foreign policy pundits frequently talk about Iran as if it's building another Persian empire, or it's just a whisker away from becoming a regional hegemony. Now, these are the people who, with their Iranian navy, couldn't take over a tanker last week. As Reason magazine goes on, the Trump administration's, quote, maximum pressure policy, unquote, is an attempt to force a significant change in Iran's behavior. Wielding the stick is a complicated process involving complicated sanctions and an increase in military assets to the Persian Gulf and threats of military action. Any realist, they point out, however, could have predicted how Iran's government and Tehran would respond to this. Throughout its 40-year history, they've been mostly at war and rivalry with bigger and stronger and wealthier adversaries. And so that has created a great deal of paranoia. So they're not going to back down. If you don't understand the historical context of the nations you're dealing with, just like we didn't understand that Vietnam had been fighting China for 1,000 years. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, we have rejected the Christian understanding of what a justified war is, as I just explained to you. That came from Augustine. I think it's, what is it, about 300 AD? Something like that. And so, you know, for 1600 years or 1700 years, we have followed those principles, but we've thrown them away here in America. We have rejected any Christian foundation to our policies. And it's not surprising, of course, as I pointed out yesterday, Leo Zagami had reported that Facebook has repeatedly taken down another quote from Augustine. And I'll just read that to you again and see what you find hateful about this, because they keep taking it down. They say this violates our community standards on hate speech, but they won't define to anybody exactly how this is hateful. Listen to this. Let us assume that if we live good lives, we will be without sin. Our lives should be praised only when we continue to beg for pardon. Let us never assume, I should say, that we'll live good lives without sin. Our lives should be praised only when we continue to beg for pardon. But men are hopeless creatures, and the less they concentrate on their own sins, the more interested they become in the sins of others. And, of course, Facebook is all about ferreting out your sins, isn't it? implying hatred and improper motives to you about everything. All these microaggressions that get you banned. Deplatformed, depersoned, even getting you a fatwa where they tell people, well, you can make death threats against Watson, who's going to be our guest coming up in this next hour, Paul Joseph Watson. But it also, I think, has to do with American exceptionalism, if you stop and think about this, in the context of what we've been talking about, right? We're always so quick to point out the faults of Iran, and they have many faults. I'm not excusing anything that Iran has done or Syria has done or Russia has done or any of these other people. But have they attacked us? Are we justified in that? Or has the American government, since World War II, been the most aggressive of any of the governments and failed in all these different aggressions? Yes, we can see the sins of other nations. Can we see the sins of this nation? I remember when Ron Paul, going back to 2011, when he was talking about how bad foreign policy decisions had resulted in blowback against this country. And that certainly applies in Iran, but he wasn't talking about that at the time. He was talking about Afghanistan and other issues. He was roundly booed at the GOP debate. Ron Paul, father of Rand Paul. I remember Ron Paul voted against both of these Iraq wars. He was right. The American people know that he was right. Veterans know that Ron Paul was right. We've had enough time to understand this and digest this. But, of course, the people who were at that debate were the GOP establishment. They're the people who are getting millions of dollars from both sides in every one of these conflicts, like Libya and so forth. And so, again, it goes back to Rand Paul. Rand Paul wants to be Trump's man in Iran. That would be good news for peace, says Reason Magazine. Serving as an alternative voice to the likes of Lindsey Graham and John Bolton could keep the U.S. out of unnecessary wars. Graham and Paul have essentially been the angel and the devil on Trump's shoulder. That's absolutely true. And they were the angel and the devil on Trump's shoulder at that golf game on Saturday. And now Politico is saying that President Trump has okayed Rand Paul trying to de-escalate the tensions between the U.S. and Iran, as the foreign minister is currently in New York at the U.N. Paul's tweets made it very clear that he is still encouraging the president to pull American troops out of war zones and bring them home. Rand Paul tweeted this. He said, actually, he was a response to Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham said, really enjoyed playing golf with President Trump and Rand Paul and Senator David Perdue. Rand Paul said, I'm proud that President Trump and I argued with you against endless wars. The president made it clear to all of us at the table, we are getting out of the Middle East quagmire. We've been there too long. Time to bring our troops home. That is a winning position, President Trump. That was a winning position for you 4 years ago, and it will be a winning position for you in 2020. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As I've been talking about the first hour, we're going to have Paul Joseph Watson join us at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have, in the next hour, we're going to have Hal Shurtleff with Camp Constitution talking about his lawsuit against the city of Boston, saying they cannot fly a Christian flag because of the First Amendment. No, the First Amendment is about the free exercise of religion, not freedom from religion. And so at Camp Constitution, they teach kids about the Constitution. They teach them about our Christian heritage and the foundation for that Constitution, just as we were talking about Augustine's theory for just war, justified war. Yeah, it really does inform. It is. You have in a country, as we're seeing now, these people who are pushing back against us in all these different levels, the 21st century Vandals and the 21st century Goths that are coming back against us. Just like the Roman Empire. And if we succumb to these people, they want to destroy our civilization. The civilization, our culture, our laws are based on a religious foundation. They have a different religious foundation. And so that's what they were telling people. They were educating the kids at Camp Constitution. Now they're going to have to educate the city of Boston in a lawsuit about what the Constitution actually says. But let's talk here a little bit about the 21st century Vandals and Goths that are out there. You know, we talk about the fall of Rome, just to remind everybody the things that took it down. You know, it was a hopelessly corrupt political system. Well, we can check that box here in the United States, right? They had an overextended military. They had made enemies everywhere in the world. I guess we could check both of those boxes as well. They had debased their currency with profligate spending. Check, check, again. As a result, internally, they had division that eventually led to civil war. And then there were the barbarians, the Vandals, the Goths. And today we have our own Vandals and Goths, don't we? We have the Vandals, the PC Marxists, the politically correct Marxists, the snowflakes, the intersectional anarchists. These people who are, they're anarchists, but, you know, they're not like the Goths, as I would call them. The people wearing black, the violent anarchists. Dressed in black. These people call themselves Antifa. So let's take a look at the final stages, perhaps, of the decline of America and how it's manifesting itself. Let's take a look first at the Vandals. You know, these are the people who want to vandalize our culture. They vandalize our monuments. They put graffiti on them. They tear them down. The monuments to our history, to our civilization. And now they're at it again. As we're coming up to the 50th anniversary of the announced moon landings. The question is, as they're coming and opposing this, this is an article from Paul Joseph Watson. Paul Joseph Watson has got the article coming up here. This one was from Zero Hedge. And talking about the attacks on white males and the moon landing. And a question I have was, did Buzz own any slaves? Is that why we're doing this now? I mean, we've had to take everybody out from, Confederate generals to Union generals to Washington to Jefferson to Christopher Columbus. That was always justified because of slavery, those white males, right? Did the astronauts own slaves? I didn't notice that. But of course, the idea is they just hate males. They hate whites. Why did they do that? Well, because we celebrate achievement. The way of the WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, is achievement. And we don't apologize for that. But as this article on Zero Hedge points out, these are liberal attempts to take away the very heart of American identity. That's what these Vandals are doing. They said the more logical route would be to try to diminish the role of white males and to try to find some unsung heroes. And, of course, they did that in the Oscar-winning film from 2016 called Hidden Figures. And as he points out, the perfect archetype of this revisionist history, it exaggerated and fictionalized the role of a cadre of politically suitable black women who did an entirely replaceable job and were no more important than thousands of others of people who were employed there and support roles. But of course they elevate them. Why? Because they are black women, not white males. And he says, while this is a unifying narrative where people of different races and varying attainments are placed alongside each other in an anniversary piece, a more sour, radicalized note has begun to surface. We see the Washington Post complaining about the anniversary of the celebration of the moon landing. They say the culture that put men on the moon was intense. It was fun. It was family unfriendly, and mostly it was white and male, tweeted out the Washington Post. As they're whining about the fact that there weren't enough women of color. And then you have in the article, they say, in archival Apollo 11 photos and footage, it's a Where's Waldo exercise to try to spot a woman of person or person of color. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's because when we succeeded, it was based on merit and not race. And these vandals, if they are capable of changing what this culture values, if they make it all about skin color, if they make it all about race and racism, we will go the way of the Roman Empire very quickly. New Statesman said, it is impossible not to observe that nearly every face you see is white and male. Because, see, the New Statesman is racist. All they see is race. They don't see accomplishments. The Guardian, good old boys from NASA, elderly white men, every one of them, who you suspect are still pining for the days of American life where men were men. That's right. We are. even further back, you know, when the men were steel and the ships were wooden. Let's go back to what they should really be looking at. What about Wernher von Braun, right? They're always calling us Nazis, but they give Wernher von Braun a pass. How can that be? Somebody needs to look at what happened at Peenemünde and the slave labor and all this sort of thing that was just swept under the rug with Operation Paperclip. You would think this would be a perfect opportunity for them to drag this up and say, there are literal Nazi connections to this. But no, they don't. It's all about white males. Why? Because it's all about politics. It's about a political agenda. That's why they're doing this. And he goes on to say, rewriting history is a crucial weapon in the long-term culture war for the left. Disappointed so often at the ballot box. But the implications of this go far beyond the past. Technological and scientific progress is a meritocracy. You can't make someone a genius by appointing them based on the color of their skin or their sex. Didn't we have a quote somewhere once upon a time by Martin Luther King? By the content of their character, not the color of their skin or what they're able to achieve. Here's another lesson for these people. It just came out. You just had another one of these sporting events. This one in New Zealand, it was a transgender male. Laurel Hubbard, who was born a man, Gavin, said that he/she transitioned in his 30s, now 41, and he just swept the female weightlifting championships there in New Zealand. Got a double gold medal. And he's eligible to compete after he met the International Olympic Committee's criteria regarding testosterone levels for transgender athletes. Imagine what he would have been able to do if he wasn't neutered. Oh, that's right. He won all the gold medals anyway, even though they neutered him. Samoa 2019 chairman said that Hubble's success was, quote, not fair to women weightlifters. There's nothing we can do about it, however, she said. We all know that it's not fair to women weightlifters, but that's a reality that we face in the world of sports. Also, just show this to the national women's soccer team when they're talking about equal pay. You need to have equal competition. But, of course, if you do have equal competition, and it's not even equal competition, again, this guy's been neutered, they scream it's not fair. And then we come to the article by Paul Joseph Watson. Not the Onion. In the UK, a woman has designed a chair to prevent man spreading. And we'll talk more about this when Paul Watson gets on, but you have to see this chair. It's a chair designed to make a man keep his legs tightly together like a woman on public transport. Another reason that we want to have private cars so I don't have to be nagged by some busybody feminist like Elizabeth Warren, a nanny like that, telling me to keep my legs together. Yeah, private automobiles for private parts. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Gather round while I sing you of Wernher von Braun, a man whose allegiance is ruled by expedience. Call him a Nazi, he won't even frown. Nazi schmatzi, says Wernher von Braun.
This guy was actually a literal Nazi, but they don't notice.
Say that he's hypocritical. Say rather that he's apolitical. Once the rockets are up, who cares where they come down? That's not my department, says Wernher von Braun.
You think as they're whining about all the white men in the space program, they talk about literal Nazis.
Some have harsh words for this man of renown, but some think our attitude should be one of gratitude, like the widows and cripples in old London town, who owe their large pensions to Werner von Braun. You too may be a big hero, once you've learned to count backwards to zero. In German or English, I know how to count down. And I'm learning Chinese, says Werner von Braun.
Tom Lehrer, don't forget that tribute to our space program. Operation Paperclip, Pina Munda, look up the history of that. That's something for people to get upset about. But no, they get upset because they can't find women of color pictured in the NASA files. And as I point out, you know, they got an Oscar when they did a movie about some women of color who were just doing perfunctory support roles as thousands and thousands of other people did as part of that program. But it doesn't stop there. The vandals who are coming after our society, you know, we've got the as Watson's going to be joining us in the next segment, I'm sure he's going to talk about this chair that has been designed to prevent man spreading. You know, cross-dressing, that's okay. Crossing your legs? No, don't do that. And now we have in Berkeley, where else, they have banished gender-specific words such as manhole. This must make Booty Gay furious. Can't say manhole, Booty. Manhole will now be replaced by maintenance hole. Craftsmen will now be replaced by craftspeople. And of course, the person who sponsored this ordinance is a councilman. Oh, they said councilman. They said that in the article here. KTLA, they're going to get some black marks. They actually call this person, a councilman. Rigel Robinson, a 23-year-old recent graduate of the University of California, Berkeley. There you go. So no longer can say manhole in Berkeley, California. Now, those are the vandals. Those are the people vandalizing our culture with these kind of Machiavellian tools of control, trying to control our speech, trying to eradicate our culture. Graffiti over statues and removing paintings, taking down statues and so forth, and taking down every aspect of our culture. And they're now busy working on trying to take down the accomplishment that people are going to be celebrating with the space program. But then we have the goths, and I think it's appropriate that we call Antifa goths. I mean, after all, they do dress in black, right? these little skinny pencil neck guys. You look at all of the worshiping of these people, and again, he was inspired by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's continual comparison of these detention centers to concentration camps. Again, you know, Nazi things. But again, they're going to let Wernher von Braun go away, but they're going to pretend that these camps are concentration camps. So he's inspired by that, inspired to violence. So those are the violent anarchists, the goths, or as they call themselves, Antifa, which is really anti-First Amendment. They're fascist in every regard. Now you've got the Denver Post jumping in on this and putting up an article talking about why this paper is trying to defend itself, because they told the Aurora, Colorado police to stop using a photograph that they had of an ICE protester. Now they've got this protester, these people, these goths, these violent anarchists, they always use masks, of course. And so they had a picture that they had taken of one of these events. And they have a picture of one of these individuals wearing sunglasses and having a mask over the bottom half of their face. And they're worried that the Aurora police, by publishing this picture, are going to find this criminal. And they want the police to stop, says the Denver Post. And so if they're trying to justify this, because they got a lot of pushback, a lot of people said, why are you doing this? Why are you telling the police to take down this picture that could possibly, maybe not, but possibly identify this individual? They said, one of our photographs from the social media post of the on the Aurora Police Department is seeking help identifying suspects from Friday night protest at the Aurora ICE detention facility. In the course of photographing the protest, we captured an image of a person with his face, I'm not even sure is a male. I look at that picture. With his face partially covered, holding a flag that appears to be one taken from the facility's flagpole. Officials at the Aurora Police Department never contacted the Denver Post about using the image. Instead, they posted the photo on their social media accounts, superimposed with an image of the Aurora City Seal, suggesting that it was either Aurora's property or that the Denver Post had provided the image to police. This concerns us for multiple reasons, they said. First and foremost, we are not a tool of law enforcement. That's right. They are a tool of the anarchists. They are a tool of the goths, the violent anarchists. That's what they have become a tool of. And most of the media falls into that as well. The Denver Post goes on to try to justify this by saying, we believe that Aurora's use of the photo suggested that we acted in partnership with law enforcement. We would never suggest that you would do anything of the sort. We know that you hate our laws and you hate them to be enforced. And then they said, and additionally, it's a clear violation of copyright law. Well, let me ask the Denver Post this. Who gives a damn about your copyright law when you don't give a damn about our border laws? So I suggest that the Denver Post call the Aurora police to do something about it. Oh, wait. That won't work, will it? You know, I'm reminded of something I saw when I was in college, and it was a forum discussion that they would have with it's the Columbia School of Journalism, and it was broadcast on PBS. And they would get a panel that would consist of big-name journalists and big people in government, and they would ask them hypothetical situations. And I was not really too fond of James Schlesinger. He was an establishment guy, Washington establishment guy. But I tell you, when I saw this back and forth between James Schlesinger and the big name journalists that were there. Here's the hypothetical situation that they had. James Schlesinger came across smelling like a rose, and these guys came across looking like Antifa, or today's CNN, if you will. Here was the hypothetical. They said, you are a reporter embedded with a rebel group or a terrorist group or something like that, right? In a third world country. And so you've been traveling with them doing a report, and then all of a sudden you come up to a situation where there is an American patrol in this area, American soldiers, and they don't see these rebels that you're with, but the rebels see them, and they're setting up an ambush, and they're going to wipe out this patrol of American soldiers. And so they asked them, and to a man, they said, would you warn the American soldiers? To a man, they said, no, I'm there as a journalist, I'm not going to take sides. And James Schlesinger, who would sit there with a pipe, you know, kind of like the Fighting Whiteys guys, he just had the pipe drop out of his mouth in disbelief, and so did I, and I wasn't even smoking a pipe. We'll be right back with Paul Joseph Watson. But that's what the media has become. That's what CNN is today. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Engineering the high-tech takeover plan. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Joining us from the UK now is Paul Joseph Watson. You can find his website, summit.news. That's summit.news. You can also find him on Twitter, of course, at Prison Planet. And I want to talk to him first about what's going on in the UK in terms of politics. Boris Johnson, the likelihood he's going to become prime minister, what's going to happen with Brexit. But as he looks like the likely winner, Paul, he was asked about whether or not he supported war with Iran, supported President Trump in terms of going to war with Iran. As we've been talking this whole program so far about Rand Paul and the golf game over the weekend, President Trump apparently has given him the okay. It sounds like it from the tweets of Rand Paul. Also sounds like that from Politico. But it looks like maybe he will be trying to de-escalate things. And in response, we've seen oil prices plummet because, of course, they've been rising in anticipation that we're going to have a major disruption of oil supplies and the economy. So I want to get Paul's comments on what's going on with Boris Johnson, the Iran war, the prime ministership, and Brexit. Thank you for joining us, Paul.
Thanks, David. Good to be here.
Where do you want to pick up with? You want to talk about a little bit about Boris Johnson and what's going on with this and his answer about Iran. They said, if you're say going to war with Iran now represents a sensible option for us in the West, I just don't believe it.
Well, I mean, it's anyone's guess as to how much influence the UK government has anymore over US foreign policy. I guess it's not that much. The question about Boris Johnson at the moment is, Is he going to be better than Theresa May? Yes, a damp flannel would be better than Theresa May. The problem is he's flip-flopped on Brexit. He'll probably flip-flop on Iran again. Before Brexit, he basically wrote two columns and only decided on which one to have published at the last minute, so he could have ended up campaigning for Remain. What he has suggested, which would have been good, was to suspend Parliament when it ended and to get this Brexit vote through. Of course, the deadline's now been pushed back to October 31st, bearing in mind we voted for this over 3 years ago and it hasn't happened yet, which is what the EU always does. They either bully countries into having a second vote or ignore the vote altogether. What he did want to do or suggested was to suspend Parliament. We've just had a vote literally about 30 minutes ago where they voted down the opportunity for the new Prime Minister, which is almost certainly going to be Boris Johnson, to suspend Parliament and get Brexit through. So Brexit continues to be completely sabotaged, despite the fact that we had an overwhelming democratic mandate in the form of the success of the Brexit Party to finalize Brexit.
And then you mentioned that Boris Johnson, you mentioned that Boris Johnson had written op-ed pieces to be on both sides. I guess kind of like, Judge Roberts here in the Supreme Court wrote both the consenting and concurring opinion making Obamacare legal. But I wasn't aware of that with Boris Johnson. I remember when he cut a video and he gave, I think it was 8 reasons to get out of the EU. And I said, those 8 reasons could be used to get Texas out of the United States. And I pointed out how much more money we send and on. But I thought it was a pretty good clip that he did. But going back to what happened, it looked like he was going to be the front runner at that period of time. But he removed himself from the process. And every one of the conservative MPs removed themselves from the process, leaving the way for Theresa May, who was a Remainer, to become prime minister. I mean, what do you think about that? Was the fix in on that?
Oh, the fix was in from the start. Her entire cabinet was a Remain cabinet. He got stabbed in the back by Michael Gove, who was supposed to basically be his supporter, his running mate. So that's why that collapsed. But he's basically a shoo-in now to win. He's going to win. It's whether he has the backing of a populist majority. What I think is going to happen is that we're inevitably going to end up with another election. But then, as you saw with the Brexit Party, it's going to be yet another populist backlash. So if he gets enough seats in terms of a majority in Parliament to get Brexit through, finally, if it takes a general election to do that, then that's what it's going to take, because he doesn't have the numbers on his side at this point, and they continue to try to derail Brexit. Meanwhile, in the European Parliament, we had the new EU Commission president who won an election. They actually called it an election. Who was she running against, David? Nobody. She was the only name on the ballot.
I saw that headline at Summit News. I thought that was hysterical. I mean, it's kind of like a communist country, right? Except that in a communist country, when only the dictator is the only candidate on the ballot, they usually win by landslide, but she only won by 9 votes.
it was a selection, but the fact that the EU Parliament is now so packed with these Eurosceptic parties, not just the Brexit Party, but, Salvini's party and parties from other countries. She only squeezed through by 9 votes, which is a process which is normally just a straightforward selection. She only squeezed through running against herself and no one else with 9 votes. So that just shows you the state of the EU right now.
I guess we could say she's not as popular as Kim Jong-un or Chairman Mao or Joseph Stalin or these other people.
No, but it seems they're doubling down on this whole idea that they have to create this brand of loyalty around the EU amongst people in European countries, which just doesn't resonate. You had the head of the European Commission before that election, Jean-Claude Juncker, come out back in May and say that people who love their countries, he said literally, these populist nationalists, stupid nationalists, they're in love with their own countries. So he called people who love their own countries stupid, yet simultaneously they're passing a law in Germany which would make it a crime to burn the EU flag and would make it a crime to make disparaging comments about Beethoven's Ode to Joy, which the European Union co-opted as their de facto national anthem. So they're saying patriotism and nationalism's for stupid people, yet trying to create this faux patriotism around the EU by literally banning free speech which criticizes the EU. So again, they've been doing that all along.
The UK EU members, Farage and Rees-Mogg and everything, when they did that, when they convened the EU Parliament, they played Ode to Joy, and they wanted everybody to stand up like it was a national anthem, and they stood up and turned their backs to it. And boy, the press got upset about that, didn't they, Paul?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you had Liberal Democrat members who were wearing T-shirts saying bollocks to Brexit, and that was fine. Nobody complained about that. But a sober, somber turning of the back to a national anthem, they were absolutely apoplectic about it, which again shows this ridiculous urge to protect the sacred institution of the EU like it's some sacred thing when it isn't. It's a bureaucratic mess.
They want it to be a super state. They want it obviously treated as if it's a country, and that's what Farage and Rees-Mogg said. They said, look, we would never disrespect another country's national anthem, but the EU is not a country, right? And so that's why they did that. And when we look at this picture that's been floating around media for the last several days of this French soldier who is flying around on this platform like the Green Goblin from Spider-Man holding a rifle. Most people are looking at that, but they're not paying attention to how that whole event was promoting a European army.
Oh, completely. And that's been in the works for many years, despite, again, the fact that when you look at the polls, it's universally opposed in all the European countries. When I saw the flying officer in France, I just thought, well, this is to deal with riots in Paris, in Marseille, yes, in Lyon now. You get riots basically every week. It's at least once a week in all these major cities. And in fact, I did some stories about the Algerian fans, the soccer fans in Paris and Lyon. Their team won the quarterfinals and then the semifinals of the Africa Cup of Nations. And they set about to inflict the wonderful diversity that they bring to France on the streets of France by attacking police stations, by throwing fireworks at people, by looting and burning stores. So when I saw that flying cop, flying RoboCop, I think that is France's future. That's what they're going to need to deal with all this unrest, because it's just on a weekly basis at this point. It's getting ridiculous.
I don't know. I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, I would not want to do that if I was a cop. I mean, you're talking about being vulnerable in a vulnerable position. I mean, it's you are literally a sitting duck, not really a flying duck on that. When we come back, we're going to talk about this other article you got about Ilhan Omar, because yesterday we had the event in Greenville. The left is all upset about the send her back chance. But you're going to talk about what happened to a journalist that actually went back to her homeland. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We have Paul Joseph Watson with us from the UK. Before I go back to Paul real quickly, and he's got an amazing story up today at Summit News. Journalist travels to Ilhan Omar's homeland to prove that Somalia is beautiful, gets killed by terrorists. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's really getting hard for The Onion and for Babylon Bee to actually do satire, because the reality of what's going on in the world is even stranger than what you can make up with a satire site. But before we go back to Paul real quickly, I want to remind you about the specials that we got at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds this program. And we have our 1776 Worldwide special that we began last week with our 34-hour broadcast is still continuing. We have a lot of products that are $17.76, all of our apparel. Things like Brain Force Plus, my favorite supplement that we sell. It's a nutraceutical, natural ingredients that help you to focus and to concentrate your mind. Ultra 12, our B12 supplement. Also Survival Shield X2 and X3 Nascent Iodines. We have our Super Silver Wound Dressing Gel. All of these are $17.76. Silver Bullet, our all-natural sleep aid, knockout. And things like Winter Sun Plus, your vitamin D supplement. All of these are $17.76 at InfoWarsStore.com. We have at least 10% off everything in the store, up to 75% off store-wide. That's InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. Paul, tell us about this story that you got up on Summit News about this journalist who goes back. Because, you know, yesterday we had all these people chanting, send her back, and the left was just outraged by that. But maybe they should be. Maybe, you know, that was should be taken as a death threat to tell somebody to go back to Somalia, right? Like a fatwa or something.
had Trump tweeting a few days ago, send them back to fix things in their own country. Well, this journalist, this Canadian-Somalian journalist, did try to go back to her own country to fix some things. She went there to challenge stereotypes and prove that Somalia was peaceful and, in her own words, beautiful. So she did all these tweets days before going back, and when she was in Somalia, lauding the beauty of the place. One respondent on Twitter said to her, quote, "They thanked her for countering the doom narrative propagated by many about Somalia." All these big Somalian activists and writers were praising her for going back. She said that she wanted to counter the narrative that people in Somalia were victims trapped in vicious circle of conflicts. And in fact, she did a YouTube video tour of one of these towns in Somalia called Kismayo. And she said in this video, she was hopeful Kismayo. The area could be rebuilt and revived, quote, "because this place is beautiful." So what happened to her? She was killed by terrorists in that exact same town that she said was beautiful. So Al-Shabaab militants stormed and car-bombed a hotel in Kismayo. It took them 14 hours, the security forces, to respond to this attack. And she was tragically killed. But again, it's one of these cases, David. I've done videos about this. There was an American couple who went biking through Tajikistan to prove that evil didn't exist in the world and that our view of other countries being dangerous and backward was simply a reflection of her own bigotry and racism. And all the world generally is a very loving place, they claimed. They got mown down, beheaded by ISIS terrorists, and a similar thing happened in this case in Somalia.
Well, it happens all the time with these people who are in love with socialism, and they decide that they will go to North Korea, and then they get captured and rot in prison, die in prison or whatever. We just had another guy who is absolutely infatuated with socialism, and that's really what we were talking about here. I said, when all this stuff happened, I said, you understand that for the longest time we've been told that Islam is a race, not a religion, but a race. And now we've moved to the point where socialism is now a race. And actually, Ilhan is now saying that. You know, if you call somebody a communist, and I said this right away from the very beginning, I said, look at this. The new narrative that's being pushed out here is that if you complain about, you don't like our politics, you don't like the way our economy is organized, you don't like our country, go back to your socialist paradise, right? That's what basically President Trump was saying in those tweets. I went through and I talked about how many times he said nation and country and all this kind of stuff, right? And yet she's now come out and said, you know, you call somebody a communist, that's code for white supremacy. I guess maybe she never realized that, Lenin and Marx were white supremacists too, I guess, in a way, right?
Yeah, not many POCs founded the movement of socialism, did they? But there's a poll which you flashed up right there. Rasmussen poll, 32% of Democrats believe that no matter what the circumstance, a white person criticizing a politician of color is racist, period. One third of all Democrats think that. And as he said, Omar said it and AOC said it in a tweet yesterday that the word communist as a slur is now also racist, which, by the way, that originated at the start of the Obama term back in early 2009 when MSNBC came out and said, if you call Obama a socialist or a communist, it's a dog whistle for racism. So they're pulling out the same trick again. With Ilhan Omar, I think the reason, obviously, that Trump is trying to make her the face of the Democratic Party and he's trying to make this squad the face of the Democratic Party is not only because their views are so abhorrent and crazy and fringe left, it's because, as we discussed on the show before, you had this poll of swing Democrat voters, and it found that of the ones who recognized her, Omar, I'm talking about, they had a 9% favorability rating towards Ilhan Omar. And in fact, when Axios released this poll, they had to put next to that 9% brackets, not a typo, because it's that low, it's almost hard to believe. So I don't think Ilhan Omar should be sent back anywhere. I think she could be kept in the United States because she's the best thing that could happen to Donald Trump's 2020 campaign, which is why I think he's trying to make her and the rest of this squad the face of it, because they're so unpopular amongst key voters.
Oh, yeah. Going back to what happened in Somalia with this journalist who went back and was killed, the tweets showing the terrorism that's going on there. And, of course, that is a group called Al-Shabaab. And this interview that kind of started all this stuff that Ilhan Omar had before she became a congresswoman back in Minnesota. She went on a Muslim program there because they have a very large Muslim community there in Minneapolis. And they were talking about how, we always hear about Al-Shabaab and, Al-Qaeda. No, they're just these people who, did something or whatever. They look at the way this guy talks about Al-Qaeda. He changes his voice when he mentions that and so forth. And so they're downplaying Al-Qaeda. They're downplaying Al-Shabaab. But right there in Minneapolis, just a year ago, they had a massive scandal with daycare centers where these people were scamming the welfare system there in the state of Minnesota and sending back vast sums of money to Al-Shabaab back in Somalia. So this is a very, very wide network of not only terrorism, but corruption that goes from Somalia to America.
Well, precisely. And then obviously we had the case of Ilhan Omar herself defending wannabe ISIS jihadists in Minnesota. She literally said we need to have more, quote, compassion for ISIS jihadists who literally want to travel to Syria and behead people. Mm-hmm. And she asked the judge to give them more lenient sentences. So she's on tape, as you said, making light of, laughing about Islamic terrorism. She refused to denounce the Antifa terrorist attack in Washington State when asked. She refused to denounce Al-Qaeda itself when asked a few days ago. So she's not even, in an optic sense, trying to back away from this kind of extremist rhetoric. She's only doubling down on it. And I think that's only going to work to Trump's favor. So the people who claim that he's being extremist with this send her back chant, which he didn't even encourage, by the way. It was started by the crowd. I think
spontaneous.
She's
we all feel that way. Before we run out of time, I just want you to lay out this story that you got at Summit News. Not the Onion. Woman designs a chair to prevent man spreading. Tell us a little bit about that, Paul.
Well, this I had to check into this a few times to make sure it was not satire. Basically, this British woman, she got so offended about manspreading, which is, as I point out in the article, otherwise known as owning a pair of testicles, okay? This is why men need to sit on public transport with their legs slightly spread apart, because we do have testicles. So she designed a chair to prevent this from happening. And the chair itself is absolutely hideous, but it won an award because it was in the interest of social justice and feminism. And that's what wins awards these days in terms of art or design, of course. And it literally prevents you from sitting with your legs slightly spread apart because there's a block of wood in it. But then she designed another one for women, which encourages them, as you see right there, to sit with their legs spread apart. So it completely defeating the object. Absolutely incredible.
All right, you can see that article, and I encourage you to take a look at those pictures there at summit.news, Paul Joseph Watson's article. But, of course, that's really what it's about. It's about inverting the social order and changing places, right? It's about women becoming men and men becoming women. That's what this is all about. They want to make all of us transition. Thanks for joining us. Paul Joseph Watson, Prison Planet on Twitter.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, there's an interesting article that was on the Drudge Report. You linked to this town hall article talking about Matt Drudge and how the future that he predicted back in 1998 is now realized. And Town Hall says that has legacy media enraged. Well, the article is accurate as far as it goes. This would be an accurate article if he had walked this back about 4 or 5 years ago. It is not an accurate article today, quite frankly, however. It points out in this article is that bringing these groups together, this is Southern Poverty Law Center, is whining about the White House summit, social media summit. Bringing these people together is beyond irresponsible. It is essentially conducting a hate summit at the White House, says the now thoroughly discredited Southern Poverty Law Center. And, of course, their bread and butter was their hate map, which also has now been thoroughly discredited. These people who were a massive money laundering scheme You got to love the fact that they stole all this money from the social justice Democrats and stashed it in offshore bank accounts. How appropriate. Anyway, they pointed out in this article, said, remember back in 1998, Matt Drudge went before the National Press Club, talked about the future, said he dreamed of a national press that was free of editors, beholden not to corporate masters, but driven by the ever-industrial spirit of the American citizen reporter. He said back then, clearly there is a hunger for unedited information, absent corporate considerations. He said, the internet is misunderstood by those people who consider themselves to be experts. Drudge said that the world had entered in 1998, had entered an era vibrating with the din of small voices. Every citizen can be a reporter and can take on the powers that be. He said, the net gives as much voice to a 13-year-old computer geek like me as to a CEO or a Speaker of the House. We all become equal, and you would be amazed what the ordinary guy knows. And that was right. That was right. That happened for about 15, 16 years. And then as Matt Drudge came here in the fall of 2015, he said, so here's what's coming. I've been told by a Supreme Court justice who later wound up dead with a pillow over his head. I've been told by a Supreme Court justice that you are going to be removed, that there's going to be a massive purging because they couldn't have this kind of equality. You couldn't have an informed citizen have as much clout and his ability as a CEO or the Speaker of the House. As a matter of fact, most of the people that I engage with when you guys call, most of you listening to this program know more than the Speaker of the House or the CEO, at least what they pretend that they know. Yeah, they do know a lot. And they get money from the back door, and they know what's going on with this stuff. But then they pretend they have all these different hearings. Oh, well, we really don't know. Is this a monopoly that's going on here on the internet? Are they shadow banning? We got to have some hearings. I'm not really sure about that. Well, you know about that. You know about that. You know what? You knew that this whole Russiagate conspiracy theory was fake from the very beginning. We deconstructed that for you. You were able to read that, comment on that. That's what they do not want to have. And it is coming from the military-industrial complex, first and foremost. The Atlantic Council, NATO, these other groups who are now DARPA, who are now putting out NewsGuard. And, of course, they want to count the votes with ElectionGuard, the operating system for all the voting machines in the country. And they were testifying back in 2017. They were testifying, we are losing the information war. We have to silence the cannons on social media. We got to deplatform these people. And that's precisely what they're doing. And so this article is basically telling people, as we had the Heritage Foundation at that social media summit, don't worry, everything is good. Yeah, they're fixing it all. Don't worry. There's no shadow banning. You don't have to worry about any of that kind of stuff, right? Not a problem. Not a problem. Now, Matt Drudge was right when he said that in 1998, and he was right about what they've done in the last couple of years when he came here to InfoWars in 2015. Town Hall needs to catch up to what's going on. And somebody in Washington, I don't think it's going to happen in Washington. It needs to happen at the state level. We got to pull this thing back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to Hal Shurtleff, Camp Constitution. We have a camp to educate children and adults about the Constitution, and now they have a lawsuit to educate the city of Boston about the Constitution. Talk to him about that, because they tried to shut down certain aspects of what they were doing there as part of Camp Constitution. But let's take a look at the rally that happened last night in Greenville, North Carolina. We have President Trump continuing on with this winning position of talking about Ilhan Omar, and the crowd spontaneously started crying, send her back. Here's a clip of that last night, video clip number 3.
Representative Ilhan Omar. Of a really great state. I almost won, first time in decades and decades, Minnesota. Great state. He goes home now to mommy, and he gets reprimanded, and that's the end. Sorry, mommy. Sorry, mom. And obviously and importantly, Omar has a history of launching vicious anti-Semitic screeds.
All right, and that really set off the left and the left-wing press. And you had Sean King, who said, that is the most racist thing I've ever seen in the history of politics in America. Perhaps he's never seen the Dred Scott decision by the Supreme Court saying that you have to return, you're legally obligated to return escaped slaves to their owners. But, you know, that's not as bad as send her back. yeah, you got to send back the slaves to the plantation. But, you know, telling her, this person who hates our country, that she needs to go back. Oh, that's racist. That's racist. And as President Trump was talking about it, he was in the middle of talking about her history of anti-Semitic remarks, things that she had said to make light of 9/11, things that she had done to attack the people who were what we've seen in the movie, the book, Black Hawk Down, there in Mogadishu. Yeah, she was made in Mogadishu, quite frankly. That's where she was formulated. And she's the kind of person who looks at the movie Black Hawk Down and cheers for the other side. That's who she's cheering for in all of that. And so they broke into a chant of send her back. President Trump said she smeared U.S. service members involved in Black Hawk Down. She slandered the brave Americans who were trying to keep peace in Somalia who were attacked by these people she loved so much, and excuses like Al-Shabaab. She pleaded for compassion for ISIS recruits attempting to join the terrorist organization, said President Trump. She was looking for compassion. Omar laughed that Americans speak of Al-Qaeda in a menacing tone. She said, you don't say America with this intensity. You say Al-Qaeda makes you proud. Al-Qaeda makes you proud. You don't speak that way about America. He said, and obviously and importantly, Omar has a history of launching vicious anti-Semitic screeds. So they were shouting, send her back, send her back. This is not a question of whether or not this is a good tactic for President Trump. Only 9% of Democrats like Ilhan Omar. And it's kind of the other way with the Republican Party. 90% of Republicans, I guess it's kind of the same way. I mean, they had some people who were undecided in the Democrat Party, but 90% of Republican voters agree with the send her home, send her back approach. So it's 9% of the Democrats like her, some undecided about that, but only 9% like her. But 90% of the GOP don't like Ilhan Omar. So this is a no-brainer for President Trump to talk about this. Go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came. You know, this is not racist, quite frankly. President Trump is older than I am, but I remember the protests around the Vietnam War and so forth. And it was a common thing for people to say, love it or leave it, America, love it or leave it. And that's really what he's hearkening back to. Love it or leave it. You don't like this country that took you in as a refugee from that place, as Paul Joseph Watson's story pointed out. You just had a journalist who was a Canadian Somalian. Isn't that interesting that in Canada, they call themselves, you know, people who have come to Canada as refugees from another country, they list Canada first. So she's a Canadian Somalian. But of course, here in America, we go the other way around. You're a Somalian first. You're a Somali American, right? We always come last. Americans always come last. This country's interests always come last. You're not even an American Somalian. You're a Somalian American. But in Canada, you're a Canadian Somalian. Anyway, she went back to prove what a wonderful paradise it was, and she was killed by the terrorists there, by Al-Shabaab, the people that Ilhan Omar, in that same clip where she was talking about, you know, they get really serious when they talk about Al-Qaeda. Isn't that funny? And then start talking the same thing about Al-Shabaab. I can't say that without hearkening back to Quick Draw McGraw. Did they have television over there where they saw Quick Draw McGraw, the cartoon horse? Many of you will remember that. I think it's Hanna-Barbera. He would wear a mask, and he had a guitar, and he would call himself it wasn't El Shabab, it was El Shebang, I think, or something. Anyway, I'm really digging deep here, but I keep having this subliminal thing coming up, El Shabang, and he would, you know, hit somebody over the head with a guitar. Anyway, it is not racist. But as I said from the very beginning, I said we've now elevated an economic and political system, socialism and communism. Those are now equivalent to race. I said that last week, didn't I? Day one? I said, look at how they're in race. And I broke it down. I read all of President Trump's tweets. There wasn't anything about the people involved. It was about the economic and political systems. And now she has come out and said, calling people communist has a rich history in white supremacy. Does she realize that the people of Russia, of the Soviet Union, were Caucasians? it was a form of white supremacy. The Soviet Politburo was a form of white supremacy. Those Caucasians who were were running the communist government there, Lenin, yeah, he was a white supremacist for sure. Absolutely amazing. She said, calling people, she tweeted this out yesterday, calling people who believe in democracy and civil and economic rights and racial justice communist has a long and rich history with white supremacy in the U.S., in the U.S. And then she harkens back to Martin Luther King and so forth as, J. Edgar Hoover was painting, anybody he didn't like as a communist or whatever. But we go back and we look at the things that Martin Luther King said as opposed to his affiliations. What Martin Luther King said was, we're not going to judge people by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. See, that's really what these people are hearkening to. With racism. But it isn't racism to talk about capitalism versus socialism. And she goes on to talk about that, as a matter of fact. Again, I said yesterday, you do a poll of people and capitalism wins here in the United States. Socialism loses still with most people. It's taken over now with the people who are just now getting out of school, who have been thoroughly propagandized from kindergarten through graduate school to think like Marxists. They are the ones who are changing this. But everybody else, capitalism is ahead. As a matter of fact, when we talk about the two different races, capitalism and socialism, those two races, because, it's racist to talk about socialism and communism, as AOC just said, right? When we talk about those two, capitalism is a race to the top. Socialism is a race to the bottom. But Ilhan Omar said, we are... in her Ilhan's vision for America that was exposed by CNS News, it is thoroughly anti-capitalist. And it's thoroughly opposed to the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, everything else this country is about. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. As President Trump was saying yesterday, the squad is a big mistake. As a matter of fact, let's play that clip. We got video clip number 6. President Trump says the squad is making a big mistake. And then I'll play for you what Boudier has to say about it. Boudier thinks it's a great thing. It's a great thing. We'll see about that. Here's President Trump video clip number 6.
Well, the Democratic Party is really going in a direction that nobody thought possible. They're going so far left, they're going to fall off a cliff. So I think they're making a big mistake, but who knows? That's up to them.
And then, of course, there's Buttigieg, who is so far to the left that he thinks, welcome. look at this. Ilhan Omar has moved over to my position, because he was born and raised a hardcore Marxist. I've talked about this many times. His father, a university professor. His mother, Marxist, hardcore. And then he goes to Harvard, studies under a Marxist professor who absolutely hates Christianity and sees it as the problem behind every problem that America has ever had, deconstructed America in every aspect. And, of course, pointing the fingers all the way back to Christianity in every case, even going up through the Vietnam War. And Buttigieg learned all that, and that's how he began his campaign. But he thinks it's a great thing with these people. Let's play video clip number five.
Mayor Pete, how would you relate to the squad if members of your own party want to take the country in the direction that you don't think is best?
I think it's very healthy for our party to have a range of opinions, especially as we get into this season of the 2020 primary. The whole virtue of the primary is it's when people hash out exactly where the party is headed. And I welcome all of those voices.
Yeah, he thinks it's very healthy. There's a big diversity there of opinions, don't you think? I mean, they all think that the world is going to melt down and we have to have a radical transformation of our economy. We have to have completely open borders. We need to realize that the Border Patrol and ICE are illegal, but the people crashing our borders are not illegal, even as they tell us, oh, we got to stop making that a crime to cross the border. But don't call them illegal. Right? We got to have Medicare for all, completely free health care. That's a right for everybody, not just for Americans, but it is a right for everybody in the world to get free health care here in America. It's just you Americans are going to pay for it. You don't have any rights because they're going to take everything that you've got to pay for the health care and the housing and the education of all these people who want to come here. And don't let Border Patrol or ICE get in the way. We're going to shut that down. We're going to kill those people because they're the evil people. And so when we go back to this, as I said, you know, we got a couple of different races here. We have the capitalist race to the top and we have the socialist race to the bottom. And that's really what this is about. Ilhan Omar said, you know, hey, you talk about, you call people communists? That's nothing but a dog whistle for white supremacy, she said. Going back to her website, on her campaign website, she spelled out her vision for America as reported by CNS News editor Terrence Jeffrey. He said, points out she wants to abandon the, quote, capitalist system, and what she wants to replace it with is a fair and just economy. See, there isn't any diversity whatsoever in terms of opinions, as Buttigieg was saying. The only diversity is in their identity politics. Oh, vote for me because I'm a woman. Vote for me because I'm a woman of color. Vote for me because I'm a man of color. Vote for me because I'm homosexual. But they all agree on the political issues, all in full agreement. We have to become Venezuela. So she wants a fair and just economy. The federal government will guarantee everybody jobs. Is there any candidate from the Democrats that doesn't believe that? Everybody gets guaranteed housing. Is there any Democrat candidate that doesn't agree with that? Everybody gets health care. Everybody gets free abortions. I mean, you got Julian Castro trying to get out ahead of the other people, you know, because there is no diversity of opinion with the Democrat candidates. And so to try to differentiate himself from them, he comes out and promoted in the first debate, we will pay for abortions for trans men, transgender men, or transgender females, or whatever. Biological men who now identify as women, he will give them abortions. Haha, you guys didn't think of that first, did you? He said to the rest of the people on the stage. I one-upped you on that. I'm going to give abortions to biological men who now identify as women, and we'll pay for it with the government. See, that's the only diversity that you got on the Democrat side. The capitalist system, she said on her site, this is called Ilhan's version. Ilhan's vision. Her vision for America. Quote, the capitalist system has led to a concentration of wealth here in America. Yeah, it has. Sorry about that. What did your system lead to a concentration of in Somalia? Violence, abuse against women, terrorism. That's what it led to a concentration of. Here in America, our capitalist system led to a concentration of wealth. What did you get in Somalia? It has led to a concentration of wealth in a small handful of elites while working people suffer. What happens to women in Somalia under that system? Do they suffer? Yeah, they suffer and die. Like that journalist who went back to show what a wonderful paradise it was. And then she goes on in her vision statement, Ilhan's vision. We must stop the exploitation of working people and create a fair and just economy. See, she's not even Somalian. She's just Marxist. She's just Marxist. And what they're doing to sell a Marxist revolution here in the United States is not to break people really so much in terms of economic classes as they are racial groups. She said, housing is a human right. on her thing. Health insurance is a human right. Abortions paid for by the government. All this is human rights. Okay, and we have to strengthen. In other words, have to raise the estate tax to limit the amount of intergenerational wealth that can be accumulated in the wealthiest families. In other words, all you Americans who, you know, your parents created this system under capitalism and you built this country, you should not be allowed to pass that wealth on to your children. You should pass that on to the people who are crashing across the border. That's what Ilhan wants. And so when we look at this, I have one thing to say about the racist thing. I think it is a mislabeling of the right, and I've seen this many times on the conservative press. I don't think that her comments about the boycott, diversify, and sanction of the BDS movement, I don't think those are anti-Semitic, because, again, that is about a political system, a political entity. The political nation of Israel is not a race. See, I'm a Christian, and I believe that we are all of one blood. We all descend from one man, Adam. Now, this whole idea that we're talking about, oh, that's anti-Semitic and whatever. Yeah, she does hate Jewish people, no doubt about it. But we're all of one blood, and let's stop labeling things. You know, the Bible doesn't talk about different races. It talks about different nations, tongues, tribes. In other words, different political entities, different language entities, and different cultures that arise from all of that. Those are the distinctions that divide us. All these distinctions based on physical characteristics of skin color, or, you know, physical features and that sort of thing, that is a eugenics construct that comes out of the false idea of evolution. That all came out of evolution, and it's about eugenics, and that is the real hatred. That's the idea that, oh, well, you know, this person's got a different skin color, they're a different race. No, they're not. We're all part of the human race. And let's stop making these political systems on either side. You know, socialism, communism, that is not a race. The nation of Israel is not a race either. We'll be right back with Hal Schertliff, Camp Constitution.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We've talked to Hal Schertliff with Camp Constitution before, and there was a story last week about how the Christian flag, which is something they were going to be flying there as part of Camp Constitution in the Boston area, how that was banned in Boston. That was the headlines on New American. And, of course, people my generation remember when Boston was constantly banning things because they thought there was too much sexual content in it or too much violence or whatever. They didn't like the language or whatever. But now they... ban that was, you know, based on their interpretation of what they needed to do to support, you know, Christian or Puritan ethics or whatever. But now they've completely flipped. And now any symbols of Christianity are banned in Boston. So we're going to talk to Hal, who is joining us on the line. Before we get into that real quickly, I just want to remind you about the sales that we still have at InfoWarsStore.com, our $17.76 worldwide special. We have many products, $17.76 store-wide at InfoWarsStore.com. We have all of our apparel, all hats, all shirts at $17.76. We have many supplements, vitamins, and minerals that are now at $17.76. Things like Brain Force Plus, our vitamin B12 formula, Ultra 12, that's methylcobalamin. You can take that orally, just actually put a little bit of it under your tongue, let it sit there for about 20 seconds. Tastes great. You don't have to get a vitamin B12 shot. Survival Shield X2 and X3 Nascent Iodine. Ultimate Bone Broth. Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid. Super Silver Wound Dressing Gel. Again, that has nano silver in it. Very, very effective at killing bacteria and viruses. It's used extensively. These types of gels with silver in them are used extensively in burn units because whenever you get a serious burn, you are at high risk for infection. And so that is still a state-of-the-art treatment. You can now get that from InfoWars at $17.76, like these other products. Also, things like Winter Sun Plus, our vitamin D formula, all those, $17.76. All the products at the store at InfoWarsStore.com are at least 10% off. Many products are 75% off at InfoWarsStore.com. All right, let's go to Al Shurtleff now, who runs Camp Constitution, and you can find information about the camp, which is coming up July 28th through August the 3rd. You can find out information about that at campconstitution.net. We'll tell you more about what's going on at the camp. But first, I want to talk about this lawsuit that came out last week. Thank you for joining us, Hal.
Well, thanks for having me on again, David. It's really a pleasure.
Well, thank you. Let's talk a little bit about the Christian flag. Tell us why you would want to fly the Christian flag at Camp Constitution. We're talking to people about the Constitution.
Well, what we wanted to do is the city of Boston has a public access flagpole. That's what I refer to it. And incidentally, the first time I became aware of this flagpole, I was serving jury duty across the street at City Hall Plaza, and they were raising, this was 2009, they were raising the flag of Communist China. It was a private group called the Chinese Progressive Association. And guess who was one of the keynote speakers? It was the beloved Ayanna Presley. At that time, she was the she was the city councilor.
One of the squad.
What's that?
One of the squad.
One of the squad, that's right, when she was in the minor leagues. But anyway, a few years after that, we raised the Gadsden flag, and we had a great ceremony. That's the flag, the yellow flag with the rattlesnake. And we had one of our good friends, the Patriot pastor, Garrett Lear, who's 6'7", and he had an operating musket with him. And we had no difficulty. But it was back in September. Actually, it was late July.
I bet you couldn't I bet you couldn't do that today because, you know, we just had the actor who did, what's his name, Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt was just criticized for having a Gadsden shirt T-shirt. They said, "Hey, that's racist." So I don't know if you'd be able to do that today. But of course, you know, now you've got the squad member who was raising the communist Chinese flag. Now
that's
she
right.
has moved on to raising that flag in the halls of Congress, essentially.
Well,
but go
I,
ahead,
I
tell
actually,
us about this. Sorry,
you can buy Gadsden flags at Federal Park gift shops. By the way,
all
over the country. So anyway, it was July. I thought about having a ceremony at City Hall Plaza to commemorate the Constitution Day. It was also the day the city was founded, September 17th. And we had planned to have one of our instructors, Reverend Stevie Kraft, a black gentleman, was going to give a talk on the need for Christians to be involved in racial reconciliation, because we know the enemies of our country are pushing race hatred as much as possible. Then we were going to have another one of our instructors who had lived in the Sudan. He had actually been tortured by the Muslims as a teenager. He was going to talk about the blessings of liberty he's enjoyed since becoming here and becoming a citizen. And then we were going to have a couple of historians talk about Boston's unique Christian history, from John Winthrop's city set on a hill to Pope John Paul II's visit here and served Mass on Boston Common. And it was all going to be upbeat, and we were going to raise the Christian flag, which you had just shown. And the Christian flag is a non-denominational flag. It doesn't represent any specific church, and it isn't copywritten. And it took about a week before I didn't get any response. I called the lady in charge of the permitting process, and she was very sympathetic. But it took about a month to get the answer that, you know, no. And I said, I need to get the official response either in a letter or an email. And it was based on the First Amendment, a violation of separation of church and state. And that was how ironic. It's so ironic that the city of Boston seal, the seal that was embedded in all their emails, has a verse from First Kings that says, "May," and it's in Latin. So unless you're, unless you study Latin, you probably wouldn't know it. But it says, "May God favor us as He favored our ancestor or forefathers." And you can,
well,
go
of course,
to,
you wouldn't know that, Hal, because she can't even read the Constitution in English. I mean, she can't even read the First Amendment to know that separation of church and state isn't in the First Amendment.
That's true. So what I did was I sent out a news release to the local media, which was not picked up on. But a friend of mine said, "Contact Liberty Council." They're a nonprofit legal organization down in Florida, and they handle cases like this. So I did, and within less than a day, they got a hold of me, and he said, "We love this case. We like the case because it's winnable and because it could set a precedent." So they took up the banner pro bono, and your listeners, I give them all the praise because they're doing a phenomenal job. And they sent out a demand letter that would be, and they waited 30 days, no response. And the suit was filed actually last July. Early July, and then we had a few hearing dates, and we had a few denials and so forth, and they decided to file another suit, Liberty Council, just last week or 2 weeks ago, pointing out that there were almost 300 times a flag was flown on City Hall Plaza. We were the first organization to be denied. Of course, just about 6 months ago, the Straight Pride people, they also denied the flag to raise their flag. So it's funny. This case has taken on a life of its own. We're very optimistic that we will prevail in this case. And we hopefully that we'll encourage other people, you know, and say we need to push back from this cultural Marxism.
Exactly. And that's why I wanted to get you back on. We talked about Camp Constitution. We'll talk about that coming up in the next segment as well. But we have seen for a very long time the push against any expression of religion, which is what is protected in the First Amendment, the free expression of religion. We've seen the push against that by the ACLU. And it's great that we now have an organization, Liberty Council, who is defending you, who is going the other way, who is shutting down the people who have inverted our Constitution. They picked the wrong people, Hal, to tell you, to try to hoodwink you about what is and isn't in the Constitution. They picked the wrong people to pick on.
Well, we have really no choice in this, because if we're Camp Constitution, we have to stand up for the Constitution. And the First Amendment, and nothing, the word, as you know, if you said this a numerous times, separation of church and state is not in there. It simply says that Congress cannot establish a religion. And Massachusetts had a state religion up until the 1820s, and the First Amendment was passed in, what, 1792, 91?
That's right. They were the last state to get rid of a literally established state church. We'll talk about that as well as what's coming up with Camp Constitution when we come back. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Hal Shurtleff. And again, you can find information about the camp itself at campconstitution.net, and also the other resources that they have there to help you educate yourself, your community, and especially your children about the Constitution and about America's history. We'll be right back with Hal Shurtleff. Welcome back. Let's travel to the past with Hal Shurtleff, campconstitution.net, and let's take a look at this thing called Establishment of Religion. As we were pointing out in the last segment, you just had the city of Boston, and I forget, Hal, was it 200 or 300 times they've flown different flags there? And, of course, one of the squad lifted up a communist Chinese flag once upon a time that you saw her do that. But they've had hundreds of flags that have gone up, but they banned the Christian flag just because they don't like it. And quite frankly, what they told you was not only we've got a separation of church and state, and you could put up any flag as long as you don't call it the Constitution flag. Don't call it the Christian flag, and you can put that up. Is that correct, Hal?
Yes, they actually said if we called it the Camp Constitution flag, we would have got the permit, but it would have been dishonest because it's the Christian flag. See, it was also interesting, too, that it's against state law to fly flags of foreign countries unless there's a foreign dignitary there. So they've been violating the state law for many, many years now, doing this.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the establishment of religion, because, you know, they invoked the separation of church and state, which, as you know and I know, is not only not in the First Amendment, as they said, but it is nowhere to be found in the Constitution. It was found in a letter between the Danbury Baptist and Thomas Jefferson. They were seeking assurances that he would not confiscate Bibles, as John Adams was falsely claiming. You know, all these exorbitant claims being sent back and forth between different political parties is nothing new. It was early Republic. And so he was telling everybody, you better bury your Bible. A lot of people were burying their Bibles because they thought Thomas Jefferson was going to confiscate them. And he said, no, there is a wall that separates the church and the state. In other words, there was a wall in his view around the state, but now the Supreme Court has put that wall around the church, haven't they?
Yes. In fact, the state and church used to cooperate, and they still do. I mean, I live in the West Roxbury section of Boston. There are a number of places where you vote in churches.
Oh, yeah. Here as well.
And the idea of the church would work together with the state, that they would encourage good citizenship, encourage obeying the law, the just laws, et cetera. And it still is the case, obviously, today.
Yeah, we talked about establishment. We touched on this in the last segment. Let's talk about this specifically. While we were on break, I looked up the exact dates. And, of course, the Bill of Rights that they're referring to there, the First Amendment, that was passed in 1791, ratified then. But you had established churches continue in Connecticut, for example, until 1818. And in Massachusetts there, where they're hammering you about this, they were the last ones to take off an established church, a literally established church, in 1833. So it continued for another 27 years in Connecticut. It's continued for another 42 years in Massachusetts. So there's nothing in the Constitution, nothing in the First Amendment that keeps a state from establishing a state church, is there? And tell us what an established state church is.
Well, established state church would be a church that's recognized by the state as the official church, and that members, and they would actually, tax money would subsidize that church.
Yeah, that's the key thing, the money.
Not that I'm not in favor of that, by the way, and I'm sure you're
right.
Not either.
Yeah, that's the worst. No, not at all. We all think that's a bad idea. I think they got it right. I think it actually weakened the churches to be on the take from the government, and it was a corrupting influence, and it restricted people's freedom. But let's understand that what they're talking about when they talk about establishment of religion, they were talking about the fact that you had all these different states had come over trying to escape. One of the primary movers in the foundation of America was to try to escape religious persecution in Europe. And so when these colonists came over and they created these states, each of these states was essentially organized around a religion. So you had Maryland was Catholic and Rhode Island was Baptist, I think. Baptist. And then you had a lot of these other places in New England were Congregationalists and stuff. And so they were very worried that a federal government was going to pick one of those religions and impose it on everybody else. And that's why they had the First Amendment there. But it was about forcing you to attend a church, or at the very least, forcing you to send money to the church. That was what establishment
was
about, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
By the way, Fisher Ames was one of the first congressmen. He was from the town of Dedham, Massachusetts, just a short distance from me. And he was one of the primary authors of the First Amendment. And in his papers, he said that the Bible should be the major book in any school.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was certainly the thing that was the substrate for that society. Everybody, regardless of whether they were Christians themselves, when they wanted to talk to people, all the way up through the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln would engage people in the language of the Bible. That was the common thread, just like you might today, refer to a well-known movie like The Wizard of Oz or Star Wars or something like that. They would draw their analogies out of the Bible, and that's where they would pull that, because that was the common substrate on which we built our culture, our law, and of course it was intertwined with our history as well. But Hal, let's talk a little bit about how we got to this situation where they've purged all expression of religion everywhere. Of course, a lot of that's due to the Supreme Court saying you cannot exercise in a public place, or if you're in a public employee, in many cases they're saying you can't even do this in off-duty hours, right?
Well, there's the Warren Court was the war against Christianity in the 1960s. There was numerous cases. And, you know, interesting, you read the Constitution, and the Supreme Court isn't supposed to have that kind of power. You know, they're supposed to be able to determine the outcome of a case, but they strike down laws all over the country. And the bottom line is that the Supreme Court does not have an army or a police department. So it's enforced by the executive branch, the Attorney General. And the Attorney General could just say, you know what, we're not going to go to Boston or Massachusetts. You know, it was kind of ludicrous, the thought that here is Mayor Marty Walsh, mayor of Boston, sanctuary city. We're not going to obey the federal law. But when it comes to this issue, we're staunch constitutionalists when it comes to the First Amendment. Can you imagine the Attorney General sending out federal marshals to arrest Marty Walsh because we're flying a flag on that flagpole for a couple of days? It's just ludicrous.
Oh, yeah. Well, I talk about this on almost a daily basis, how we have adopted this idea of judicial supremacy. We've gone way beyond Marbury versus Madison, and
that's
we pretend that every state legislature and every state governor and every state constitution and all of the branches of the federal government are subordinate to the judiciary. So you've got this situation, 3,500 different federal judges, and any one of them can blackball the president on policy that is his authority. And, of course, that never was the case. You had Andrew Jackson thumb his nose at the Supreme Court when he disagreed with them. They didn't have the ability to do that. But going back to the religious issue, and as you're pointing out, the Warren Court in the 1960s, it's not, as they would define establishment, and this is, again, it's not establishment. Establishment was when you said, well, you got to attend that church, or at the very least, you got to pay that church. But And that continued for another 42 years there in Massachusetts after the Bill of Rights was passed. But there's some other examples I'll throw out here to the audience. In New Hampshire, the Constitution required members of the state legislature to be Protestant for quite a long time. In North Carolina, you had to be a Protestant up until 1835. Then they got a little bit more inclusive, and they included from 1835 to 1876, you had to be either Protestant or Catholic. And then they loosened it up even further after 1835 and said, all right, anybody except for atheists can hold state office. And that stayed there until the 1960s when they started doing this Warren Court stuff. So this idea that they imposed on us from the Supreme Court in the 1960s was against over 170 years of history.
Well, David, the Massachusetts Constitution is the oldest constitution still in use. And it is a Christian document. It talks about the great architect of the universe. And they're talking about Bechtel Corporation, talking about God. It says that morality and piety are the attributes of an elected official. And those are the kinds of virtues that you should have when you make your choice. And that you have a duty and an obligation to worship God. And many other state constitutions have similar wording.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we've gotten to the situation now where the Supreme Court is not just intruding itself into issues that are completely contained within a state, which they have no authority under the Constitution, as you just pointed out, but also intruding themselves into the family, intruding themselves into personal decisions, as they have done with the definition of marriage, as they've done with the definition of life and abortion and so forth. And it seems like it's never going to end. I think the most important thing that President Trump could ever do, and maybe he will do it because of the border, maybe he'll do it because of things like the drug pricing issue. But the most important thing he could do would be to stand up to that abuse of power that is coming out of the court system.
Well, we know that the Supreme Court justices can be impeached, but that's a difficult process because it takes two-thirds of the Senate. It has to be really a real strong case. And I know that back in the 60s, there was a movement to impeach Earl Warren. And while it wasn't successful, at least it educated people that the Supreme Court, they're not nine gods in black robes, that they're human beings and they can be held accountable.
They're lawyers in black dresses.
That's right. In drag, right?
And they really, these emperors have no clothes. They have no authority, quite frankly. And that's the important thing for us to understand. The important thing is that we're going to have officials, whether it's at the federal level or even at the state level, who are going to stand up to them and say, you don't have any authority to do this. Well, that concludes our program. Thank you so much for joining us, Hal Shurtleff. And again, you can find information about Camp Constitution at campconstitution.net. And as I begin every program, we'll just say it today. That's it for the program. July 18th, year of our Lord, 2019.